But it's still a small community. I don't know the exact number, but we're not talking about hundreds or thousands, really. Translating Chinese to English is one thing, but to get into a very specific specialized field of translating Chinese medicine into English, I mean, it's quite small. It's really not big. It's not big enough, for that matter. I don't know the exact numbers, but we need more. We need more.
Could you talk briefly about your methods of translation?
Sure. My method essentially is to read the text in its entirety, and then I'll read it again as best that I can. And I'm going to try to understand the methods of the writer, the writer's influences, try to really get into the head of the writer and, you know, understand, you know, political situation, environmental situation of that time, depending on where, on what time period we're reading. And once I feel like I have a bit of an understanding of what the text is saying and the style of the writer and the message that he's trying to convey, then I'll start to break it down and start to translate it and really just try to break it down. I mean, it's a lengthy process. I know some wonderful translators who can really translate very, very quickly and produce beautiful, beautiful work. I'm a little bit slow in the sense that I'm very anal and meticulous about my work, and I worry about it and overthink it sometimes. So it takes me quite a bit of time. But the process is essentially read again, understand, begin to translate, and then eventually just start editing so it actually makes sense.
In your experience, what are the best publication outlets that publish translations of ancient Chinese medicine literature and contemporary Chinese medicine literature?
There's only a few, really. I think that as far as the people that are publishing, there's a publishing house called Paradigm Publications. There's Eastland Press. There's a few others that are – their names are just slipping me right now. But I think that what's happening right now in our field is a lot of people are leaning towards self-publishing. And I think that the reason that people are self-publishing is because they've got more control of their work. And in this day and age with social media and because of how small the community really is, it's not hard to let people know about your work. You know, there also is a great publishing house, in my opinion, and this is the same publishing house that I published my text with. They're called the Chinese Medicine Database, and they're based out of Portland, Oregon. And their primary objective is to get as many classical texts translated as possible. And I think to date, they've published probably about 9 or 10 very important works. And the fellow behind that project, Jonathan Schell, is really, really committed to getting as many books out there as possible. And I think what they're doing for the field of classical Chinese medicine is truly amazing.
How has your experience as a student and translator of the Chinese language changed your understanding of Chinese medicine?
I feel like I had to relearn the medicine. I think that once I started to learn Chinese, I went back to a lot of the basic textbooks, and because I felt that I wasn't being given the whole picture. You know, a lot of the books that we were using in school in English weren't necessarily translations of mainland texts or anything. A lot of these texts were writers' opinions of the theories and philosophies behind the medicine. And I mean, there were some good ones. I mean, don't get me wrong. There are some great English texts out there. But I feel like I really had to go back and learn. And I think that one of the greatest things that I've experienced and that I've really noticed is understanding the nuances behind certain words, where, you know, where you're taught that a word can mean something and you attach your, you know, your clinical perspectives and your strategies to that word, whereas in Chinese that word can mean many, many things. And it's learning how to interpret those words that really opened up a lot for me, and it really helped me open up the possibilities to a lot of classical texts. I think that a lot of people feel that a lot of these texts are very limited, and how can we treat, you know, modern day patients with, you know, with books that were written 1800 years ago? And I think the problem with that is that people are not reading between the lines. And again, they're not really understanding that this is a physiology based medicine, and that really physiology hasn't changed in 2,000 years. The body still reacts the way the body reacts. The external influences are different, but it's still going to react and change very similar.
In your view, what are the most important medical texts of Chinese medicine still in need of translation into English?
Too many lists. There are so many books, but I can say from my own opinion, and this is probably based more on my preferences, is more commentaries on the classical texts. It's a great tradition in Chinese medicine to take an old classical text, for example, the Shanghan Zaping Lun, and write a commentary on it. And that would just literally be that writer's interpretation. And that is where I spend a lot of my time reading. I read a lot of commentaries. There's a lot of really great writers and thinkers in Chinese medicine over the last 2,000 years, clearly. And so I think that we really need to focus on translating a lot of these commentaries, because they're just too good and can really, really open up a whole new perspective for practitioners.
How can the TCM community better support this translation work?
I'm really not sure. I think that the problem, essentially, I think that a lot of people don't get into translation because it really does not pay very well. And I hate to bring up the money thing, but that is probably essentially what's inhibiting, and that is probably the greatest impediment to producing more translations, because it takes a lot of time, it takes a lot of commitment, a lot of sweat and tears to produce a translation. And if people aren't being supported, I mean, if people aren't buying the texts, or if people aren't being able to fund the work, it's just not going to happen. And I totally get it. I mean, it took me 2.5 years to finish my text, and that's between running a clinic and having a family and stuff. I mean, it kept me up many nights, and it's a lot of work. And to not get paid to do these things, it's, you know, it has to be a labor of love. But at what point do people still need to eat and live? So I think that essentially it's a monetary issue, unfortunately.
Could you talk a little bit about the current state of scholarship in traditional Chinese medicine?
I'm not really sure. I think that, you know, like I said before, the undergraduate level is the undergraduate level. It's not really any different than it is in China or North America. I think it's all essentially very similar. I think that in the graduate and postgraduate level, I think that depending on who you're studying with or what school you're studying, the scholarship can be extremely, extremely high. I mean, you know, I've had classes in China which were not very good. I mean, the scholarship was very low, and it really wasn't anything new, or it wasn't anything that we hadn't already delved deep to at the undergraduate level. But I've also been through classes or been sat in clinic with doctors who just blow your mind, who the scholarship is just so high, and there's really a very, very strong knowledge of classical medicine and old literature. And so the scholarship can be very high. As far as how the scholarship is in North America, I can't really speak to that. I'm really not sure. I've been out of school for a while now, so I'm not really sure what the current state of the education is out here.
Could you tell me about any specific areas of interest that scholars of traditional Chinese medicine in North America and China are currently focused on? Just some broad areas.
I think that right now, at least in my experience, there are two schools right now of thought. There are the scholars that are focusing all their energy into research and trying to prove theories and trying to almost biomedicalize the system, which there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, there's science is great, and Chinese medicine, I think in the right format and the right process, can really hold up to the rigors of scientific study. And then there is the school of thought that is heavily based on the literature, on the classics, and really focusing on that.
In your opinion, what could be done to improve the scholarship?
In North America, I think that what is essential would be to teach more Chinese classes. I think that there are a couple schools. There's a school in as far as Canada goes, the only school that I'm aware of is a school out in Nelson that does have a Mandarin element to their program. There's a couple great schools in North America that are also teaching Chinese. And I personally think that that needs to be the focus. I mean, of course, the medicine is important. I think that it has to be taught from the perspective of the classics all the way up to modern works. But I really think there needs to be an emphasis on medical Chinese. People don't have to learn conversational Chinese. They can just learn how to essentially read medical Chinese, because once you can read a little bit of medical Chinese, your entire world is going to open up as far as journals, as far as research, as far as classical texts. I mean, it really opens up an entire ocean of information that is otherwise not provided in the North American education.
How much interest do local practitioners show into the traditional Chinese medicine scholarship?
To be quite honest with you, I'm not sure. Some of the people that I associate with that I know are very, very heavily into the scholarship and are, you know, arduous students of the medicine and, you know, really, really spend their entire, you know, spend their lives under this recognition that we are perpetual students and that we need to consistently learn. But otherwise, I'm really not sure.
Could you briefly talk about the Taoist origins of Chinese medicine?
Sure. I think that essentially the connection between Taoism and Chinese medicine stems back to this concept of holism and this microcosm of the macrocosm. And in Taoist literature, specifically the works of Lao Tzu in the Tao Te Ching, talks about man being a reflection of his environment and the true microcosm within the macrocosm. And, you know, there's talk about harmony and about yin and yang and the five elements and how essentially we are just a reflection of our environment. However, there was a lot of emphasis in Taoist medicine prior to the Han Dynasty in immortality, and there was they would use a lot of medicines to try to achieve immortality, and it wasn't until I believe the Eastern Han Dynasty that Zhang Zhongjing, the writer of the Shanghan Zabinglun, really tried to break that down and get into more realistic medical practice, if you will, about actually treating conditions and about looking at the medicine and how it can work. Of course, I mean, you know, Chinese medicine is a holistic medicine, and it does view the environment and humans as this interconnected whole, and that is essentially the tenet of Taoism, really. So I think that there's a strong connection there.
Given that Taoism is so essential to Chinese medicine, why is it so ignored in current TCM education in Vancouver and China?
I'm not sure that it is. I mean, I'm not sure whether it's being taught now in the current systems. But I think that essentially the problem is exactly the same as the classics, is that there really isn't much emphasis put on classical literature. And when we talk about Taoist literature or Confucius literature, they hold just as much weight as the clinical handbooks as well that were written 2,000 years ago, 1,800 years ago. So I think that if a lot of the education systems are foregoing the classical texts, the medical classical texts, then of course they're also going to ignore the Taoist texts, which is, in my opinion, a huge mistake. It's a huge mistake. That I think that in order to understand Chinese medicine, you need to understand its origins, you need to understand its evolution, you need to understand really essentially what it's based on, and I think that truly can make somebody a great practitioner and in really, really getting to the concrete essential understanding of the medicine. So it's really a shame to ignore a lot of these texts.
Is there a difference between Taoist and classical Chinese medicine?
I don't think so. That's a great question. I think that the philosophies are very similar, that they run on basically a lot of the same principles. But of course, classical Chinese medicine is also a hands-on medicine, and there's going to be a clinical application as well, which I'm not well versed in a lot of in a lot of Taoist texts. I mean, I have read, of course, the essentials and stuff. But there, you know, as far as the medical practice goes, I'm not really sure how similar it is to the classical system that I've been trained in and that I practice in. Because, you know, even within classical medicine, there are several schools of thought as well that have branched out. I mean, Chinese medicine is this amazing tree that has a multitude of branches. And, you know, the branches are, you know, they're still the tree, right? So, and Taoism is essentially one of the roots, really, of that tree that has provided life and nourishment for the principles behind it. But classical Chinese medicine has just become one of the branches and one of the evolutions of the practice. But, I'm not sure.
Any last words you'd like to say to the public?
Any last words? I think that it's a beautiful medicine. It's a very old medicine. I think that for students or even modern day practitioners, I really can't emphasize enough the importance of returning to the source, returning to the classics, reading these books, rereading them, really trying to understand what they were saying, applying them in clinical practice, and being perpetual students. I think it's really, really important to realize that, you know, as practitioners, you know, we can't learn a 2,000-year-old system in a 5-year program or even in 7 years or even in 10 years. My own opinion about the medicine is that I truly won't get it or understand it until I'm on my deathbed. And then I'll have a moment of clarity where it's like, I get it, you know, and I'm fine with that. I have no problem devoting my entire life to understanding and letting this process unravel before me, because it's a beautiful process. And there's too much to read and study in this lifetime anyway. So I can only chip away at it the best that I can. But ultimately, my last words are return to the source.
I'm very glad to hear it. Thank you very much.
My absolute pleasure. No problem.
And that was the second half of an interview with Dr. Avon Evan, a clinic owner, acupuncturist, herbalist, and scholar of classical Chinese medicine. We considered the differences between classical Chinese medicine and contemporary Chinese medicine as practiced today, and further discussed a classical revival and Avon's translation book. For anyone who's interested, Dr. Evan's clinic is located in Port Moody. You can find more information by visiting his website at www.rockypointwellness.com.
Hello, netizens and dear listeners of Bitcoover FM. We have been on the air for 8+ years, and we just want to take this time to say thank you for tuning in every week, helping grow the program, and staying locked right here on CJSF 90.1 FM.
Diverse, independent, yours. You are now listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting from Burnaby, British Columbia.
your man Watson. And you know natural flavors always keeps it on lock.
It's Mikey Dangerous, ain't no